Hello and welcome to Two Peas in a Pod, the medical education podcast from the Children's Emergency Department here in Derby. I'm Ian Lewins again, one of the consultants, and I'm very happy to be joined by one of my consultant colleagues, Dr. Julia Surridge. Good afternoon, Julia.
Good afternoon, Ian.
And we are going to talk MAJAX, or Major Incident Training. So what is MAJAX?
So MAJAX, or Major Incident, depends on your hospital, is the word basically used to describe major incident. So you might have an icon on your desktop, for example, MAJAX policy. MAJAX isn't really the technical term, it should be major incident.
Okay, good. Okay. So how did you get involved, and what is your involvement currently within this trust?
Okay, so I started as a paediatric registrar. I did the hospital major incident medical management and support course,
a bit of a mouthful. Easy for you to say.
Otherwise known as HMIMS, yep. Which is ties in very well with MIMS, which is the pre-hospital major incident course. Yep. It's an ALSG course, it's a two-day course, and it is excellent because it pulls clinicians like myself and managers and senior nursing staff out of our clinical silos and makes us realise actually the bigger picture, what's going on in the hospital. Really enjoyed the course, put forward as an instructor, became an instructor, and landed in my current hospital, the Royal Derby, as the only instructor in hospital MIMS in the hospital. So like all things in life,
you're it.
I am it. I show enthusiasm, and next thing I know, several years later, I'm now within the Trust Emergency Planning Steering Group. So we plan exercises, we make sure that all of the training within the hospital is up to date, all of the plans are up to date, and yeah, that's basically where I'm at.
And who sort of, you kind of intimated it's not just clinicians, it no. is management as well. So who gets involved in sort of the HMIMS training? Who do you train then?
So we encourage anybody who's in a senior role within a hospital. So it could be senior manager, senior clinician, senior nurse, senior porter, anybody that's really going to be leading a team, not necessarily a huge team, it could be a small team. Desperately trying to encourage surgeons to come, anaesthetists. I don't think I've ever seen a trauma and orthopaedic surgeon, for example, on the course. Right. But the more people like that that come, the better it all becomes.
Okay. I guess one question people would say is, okay, that sounds great, but why do we need it? Why do we need major incident training? So here in Derby, we've not had a major incident for decades.
Indeed.
So what's the point?
So like all things in medicine, the more you practice, the better you become. And actually, with regards to the Manchester bombing, the NHS England debrief from that, a lot of clinicians felt and managers felt they'd very recently had a major incident training exercise. So fortuitously, they were really up to speed and up to date with what they needed to do when that occurred. These things are always tragic situations. We have to remember that we are all going to be working under extraordinary conditions and that you will be asked to step outside of your comfort zone, take on a role you're not necessarily familiar with. So we need to practice, we need to rehearse, we need to train so that when it actually happens, we really understand what our role is.
Mm. It's one of those things that it'll never happen until it happens.
Absolutely.
And then you're thinking, oh my God, what do I do? So thinking then back to sort of Manchester, what were sort of the learning points that kind of you took away from that or that were passed on to you as in your role?
Okay, so there's actually a very good debrief that is well worth a read if you have any interest in major incidents. And it's not just Manchester, there's many other documents out there. The London bombings, for example, there are a very, very long list of recommendations from that. I think what's key is communication, always communication, and how do you go about doing that in this sort of situation? You can't necessarily default to telephones. The more information you pass up to senior management, the more they can help. I think, again, a key thing was, well, they'd trained and they knew what they were doing. There were five hospitals involved. And out of those five, a good number had done some recent training. I think for anyone at any sort of level, to open your plan on the day when it's happening, that's not the time to read your plan. Awesome. You need to understand it.
Or even, can I find the plan?
Or even, can you find the plan? Indeed.
Because that's a bit embarrassing.
It is. Indeed.
We'll refer to the plan. Does anybody know where it is? Okay, so I guess that's the first thing, is where's my plan?
Where's your plan?
And do I know the plan?
Absolutely.
And are these, when you're thinking about the HMIMS course, are these the sort of things on the two-day course that you would go over? Is that, you know...
Yeah, so the beauty of the HMIMS course is it's very generic, so you're not necessarily going to be labelled as the emergency department consultant. Mm. So you will all be working in tabletops, and we mix up the tabletops, so you've got a mixed group of clinicians, preferably with some managers, and you all work together running that hospital over a couple of days. It's called Mimsville, similar to the MIMS course. Yes. And we push a whole load of casualties through the 2 days on separate tabletops in the different sections and different scenarios. So there's four tabletops, and the first one is a sort of very gentle introduction to Mimsville and the emergency department. Then we start introducing casualties in the reception phase. Then you start actually treating your casualties in the definitive care phase. Yep. And then you start thinking, well, how do we all recover from this? So recovering of the staff, recovering of your teams, of your targets that all the hospital has to still conform to, even though you might be the receiving hospital in an incident.
Okay. And once you've done that, that's in the same way, because you said it's an ALSG course, in the same way as ALS and APLS, that's valid for 3 years, 4 years?
That's valid for 4 years.
4 years, okay.
Indeed.
Which is fine. But how do we keep our competencies up in between that 4 years?
Okay, good question. We are lucky in here in the Royal Derby that the hospital has taken this on as mandatory training, although there's a bit of caveat to that because it's essential to role as opposed to official thou shalt do your mandatory training. However, it's in there, and we have different levels of training. There's a DVD, which is a bit of an introduction, and then within the teams, we start doing some simple PowerPoint presentations, which literally are, what is your role, where is your plan, where do you need to report to? Keep it very, very simple, because otherwise people are just going to start switching off. But I think it's about understanding, should it happen on your next shift, what should you be doing?
Okay. And one of the things that I see as I walk around, there's lots of sort of signs up, particularly John's house, of Silver Command and Gold Command. Uh-huh. What's that all about?
So Gold is very strategic. So Gold would be our chief execs, senior managers, and what they're looking at is the strategic role of the hospital and who else is out there in the bigger area. So they'll be communicating with the care commissioners, with the minor injuries units, with all the other primary care walk-in centres, etc., to say, we, the Royal Derby, are currently a receiving hospital for a major incident. We cannot take our usual business. So that's what they'll be doing. They'll be communicating with our ambulance teams, for example, to say, what can you do to support us? Because obviously we'll be using all the ambulances within our East Midlands. So they're looking bigger picture, and it depends on how big the incident is as to how far up that goes within all of the levels of NHS England, for example.
Okay. And I guess following on from that, maybe one thing I should have asked at the start is actually we're talking about major incident.
Indeed.
What is that the same for different places? How would you define a major incident? Is a major incident for this hospital the same as a major incident for a bigger hospital or a smaller hospital? Or is it sort of situationally different?
So it can be situationally different because it depends on the team that you have there on the day and how big a hospital you are. So, for example, one hospital might be overwhelmed by six casualties from a bus or a minibus, whereas a bigger hospital would manage and wouldn't necessarily call that a major incident. Mm. So it revolves around the type of casualty. So you might be overwhelmed by paediatric cases, which for most hospitals is huge.
Yeah.
Or you might have a large number, so a bus crash, for example, and then expanding on that even more, you might have a mass casualty, which is usually well over 100, and it won't just be one receiving hospital, they'll be sent to numerous hospitals around you. So it's the number, type and severity.
Okay.
It might even be a location. So, for example, you might have somebody who's in a bus or a minibus stuck in a river. Most people get out except one. but the first responders will call the major incident. That will be appropriate because the location of that is a fast-moving river and you need well-trained people to be getting that one survivor out.
Okay. And that leads on to another point, actually, with you sort of saying that the first responders might call. Who makes that decision that this is a major incident?
So the first responders at the scene, who might be ambulance, police or fire, could say there is a major incident. But we have to remember that a major incident for one service is not necessarily the same for another. For example, Lockerbie, sadly there were no survivors, but that was a major incident for emergency services, but not for the hospital. So usually if there's a lot of casualties, then the emergency service would declare a major incident. And then that would be transferred to a hospital. We would be put on standby, and what that means is that you'd be waiting for more information coming through when the senior medical commander or the senior incident commander would give you a bit of a ballpark figure of the number of casualties, the type, etc., etc. But again, it's about understanding your major incident plan. Does the messages come directly through switchboard from the emergency services and then it's declared, or does it come via your emergency department? And then the emergency department consultant would declare a major incident.
Okay. So putting in the sort of, say, the hypothetical situation, it's you're on shift, it's Monday evening, and there's a busload of kids coming back from Alton Towers, big crash, fire brigade on the scene, police on the scene, ring ahead and say, we've got a mass casualty, we've got a major incident, there are 30, 40 kids with significant injuries, you're the lead. What would you do next? What's your...
So if we were put on standby, then I'd be discussing with the my senior nurse colleagues. I'd be liaising with adults, because obviously I'm a paediatrician, or paediatric emergency medicine person. So I would be very much doing a joint response with next door. We've got to be very careful, however, that we don't tell too many people, because what you don't want, by the nature of who we are, we start passing the message on, and then before you know where you're at, theatres are cancelled, outpatients are cancelled. So I'll be getting a core group of people together to having a discussion to say, look, where are we at? What's the staffing in the department? How many patients have we got? Is there anyone that we can mobilise quickly? But we'd have to be very careful. We didn't do too much until we got the major incident declared.
Okay. And then as sort of casualties start to arrive and we say, actually, this is not standby anymore, this isn't a major incident, then it sort of escalates.
It would escalate. Yeah. I would hope that it would be declared before the casualties start arriving. That's not always the case. One of the hospitals in Manchester received casualties before there was declaration of an incident, and that was to do with the nature of the incident. They weren't sure necessarily whether this was a dirty bomb or not. Yeah. So a dirty bomb. So obviously there was a delay. So by the nature of people, they will find their way to a hospital somehow. So you might get people who turn up, and that might be the first thing that you know. So if it looks like there's a few coming in, then yes, we would have a discussion and then declare a major incident. Our switchboard would then start calling people in. We've got somewhere between 20 and 22 people on the initial call out list switchboard. The quickest time that they've managed to get through that is 22 minutes. To get through those names. Those are senior people within the hospital, or maybe the on-call person for torn orthopaedic or surgery, for example. And then we would have to rely on those individuals cascading out to their teams, and they continue to cascade out. And at some point, somebody's keeping a log of who they've called, when can they come in, and actually thinking further ahead, retaining some staff, because you don't want everybody to come in immediately, because you'd need to take over either on the night shift or the next day shift. You need some fresh staff to come in and support and take over.
So it's planning not just for the now, it's planning for the what happens after that and after that and after that.
Absolutely.
And is that why it's useful to sort of have switchboard doing it rather than you say, do you know, I'll just WhatsApp everybody, I'll text everybody? Because nobody then quite knows who you've been in touch with, who's got back to you. Is it better to sort of drive it all through switchboard?
Well, the initial call out will be through switchboard. Okay. It is very reasonable to have within teams a way of doing it. So WhatsApp is a very good example. Mm. As you know, we've tried that and it works. I would add a caveat: if you're doing an exercise, make sure you put exercise in it. Otherwise, people will be thinking, what on earth is Dr. Lewin's doing? Mm. So be very clear with your team. If it is an exercise, that's what you're doing. any form of communication is fine as long as it works, and as long as someone is logging who's responded and can they come in. Maybe even ask when you put, if you put a message out, say major incident declared, what is your ETA potentially? Generally what happens is the people who live the furthest away are held to come back in later.
Right, okay. It's all very exciting.
Indeed.
And of course, as we say, going back to this, it's something that you think, well, I hope I never need it. But it's so important because, you know, it's the day that you'll need it that you'll need it.
Absolutely.
So if people are interested in getting involved in this, can anybody get involved in this? I mean, you sort of say paramedics, GPs, nurse practitioners, can they sort of get involved in the MIMS and the HMIMS and those sorts
Absolutely.
Of things?
So certainly for HMIMS, we would encourage anybody that's hospital-based to come to that. There is no reason why, if you're in a minor injuries unit, for example, that you couldn't come along. I think the principles are the same. And actually it might be very useful for you to come and see what the hospital is doing so that you know how that we all work together as a team, albeit strategically across bigger areas. If you're within a hospital, find the person in your team that's the lead for major incident or has an interest in major incident, because that's how I started. Work out your own exercises, whether that's communication or tabletop exercises, because those are really powerful. You can learn all sorts of things from doing a tabletop. And just approach as many people as you can. Read the plan. Is it actually in date? Does it make sense? If you started in the trust the day before, would you understand what's put in front of you? If you don't, see if you can support rewriting it. There's lots of little things that need doing, so don't be put off by the fact that this is it's huge, because lots of little things need changing and updating.
And how often do you just think about that plan? As you say, it's great to have one. It's no good if it's 10 years out of date. So how often does the plan get visited again and again?
So that's up to us and the EPSG to keep up to date with those plans. Mm-hmm. It does default to the wording if it's a guideline or a policy as to what the recommendations are. Generally, we would probably look at it every 2 to 3 years. If, however, something major has happened within a hospital, for example, merging with another hospital, then clearly we need to revisit things and they need rewriting. It may be that you've got a new team that have taken over. Any opportunity like that is a good opportunity to have a look at the plan and see is it fit for purpose.
Great stuff. So the bottom line is really important. We hope we'll never need it. But if we've trained, as they did in Manchester, you'll be able to respond, hopefully, in the best way possible.
Absolutely.
Okay, lovely. Thank you very much for your time, Julie.
Thank you very much, Ian.